I think you'd come across millions of those little make or break decisions, and that's the big one that's ahead of us.
Like many entrepreneurs, Laura Curtis Ratana ended up in a business she never dreamed she would be in.
I never ever thought I would go into marshmallows, although I've always really loved them, starting from when I was a Girl Scout and vacationing in summers on Lake Michigan with campfires and marshmallows as, you know, a perennial thing.
In fact, Laura initially went to college to study psychology. Every summer or semester off, however, was spent in a kitchen. It was clear a passion was brewing.
Every summer or every semester I had off, I would go work in different kitchens. I just started falling in love with cooking and sharing food. And I ended up going to the Culinary Institute of America after I got my undergrad. And from there, I went to New York and fell into research and development, which is a really cool field for anyone in the culinary arts. You get to learn not only how to be creative and, you know, constantly follow trends and see what's up there, what's coming next, and what new ingredients are on the horizon. But it also taught me how to cost and work with packaging and do all the, you know, get all the details in order for really bringing something new to market.
After work, Laura would spend her evenings in the kitchen playing around with the idea of a gourmet s'more of sorts. Little did she know, this little confection would be a game changer for her. After her stint in New York, Laura moved to Atlanta with her husband, and it was there they decided to see if what she had created had legs.
My husband and I decided to put this thing that we had created at home out there into the universe and see who responded to it, how people liked it. We knew we loved it, and it was just something that I had played around with at home after coming back from work. So the first one we made was the raspberry hibiscus marshmallow, and it was just this beautiful bright pink. It had a flavor unlike any other marshmallow I had tried, and we put the cookies around it because that was the natural thing to do, the dark chocolate shortbread style cookies that we make now, and we loved it. So we put it out up on Kickstarter.
That was December 2013. The campaign funded, giving Laura the affirmation she needed to pursue this thing further. But still, she wanted to be cautious, because despite the validation, Laura's background was in food R&D. She was comfortable in the kitchen and crafting a product that would hold up and be appealing to the palate. It was all the business stuff that was the challenge. And that is something many of us struggle with as entrepreneurs. We're well-versed in our craft, but it's the uncharted territory of running and scaling a successful business that forces us to learn as we go, taking countless little risks along the way. So how do you prepare? Unfortunately, there's not a one-size-fits-all template we can follow, but there are models and processes that have proven effective. One is the idea of scaling out, not up.
I believe that when you start a company, it's important to build a base. Just like if you would be building a base for a pyramid, it's important for that base to be stable. And sort of that whole concept of scaling out first before you sort of hop into scaling up. And we've seen some great examples of, like, Twitter, for example, when they scaled up pretty quickly, and then it took them a while to scale out and become stable and such. If you scale out and figure out your architecture first, you automate your processes with, you know, tools such as Chef and Puppet, that it's easy for you to respond to the market needs. It is a lot safer, and in my opinion, is what a startup should be doing.
That was James Kenigsberg, Chief Technology Officer and founding member of 2U, a technology platform that partners with leading colleges and universities to deliver online degree programs to students globally. And he knows a thing or two about building sustainable products. He has a long history with technology and product development at companies like the Princeton Review and Ogilvy & Mathers, and now at his own startup, where they focused on scaling out early on. Scaling out and scaling up are terms you will most commonly hear associated with tech-based companies or those reliant on servers. It's akin to putting all of your eggs into one powerful and pricey server versus dividing the load amongst multiple lower-cost servers. The latter affords you the ability to add servers as needed, creating more flexibility. Applied in the business sense, scaling out would mean you're putting the processes and architecture in place to ensure flexibility down the road. So hiring or ramping up production simply becomes a matter of replicating or falling into a process you've already created with little to no downtime. Luckily for Laura, the idea of building a solid foundation was something she was wired for, and it was working.
We do not spend money lightly, and we've had to make a couple big investments up until now, but those are always scary moments. But just really thinking through how we're going to turn an investment around so that we can make it worthwhile as quickly as possible. So far, you know, I feel like we've been really, really lucky and had a smooth ride. You know, we were very small, taking it really easy at the beginning, working with our local boutiques in Atlanta.
But then, as luck would have it, an unexpected order came in. Anthropologie, the women's clothing and home decor store, wanted to stock Malvi Malo in their stores nationwide just for the holiday season.
That came out of the blue. It was something we could not have prepared for, and it totally blew us over. But it's been amazing, and it's definitely helped us take a big step into the 2015, and I think opened a lot of doors for where we can go. So we've increased our pace tremendously because of that.
Though meeting the demands of that seasonal order was a challenge for a small operation like Malvi, they were able to pull it off. There were long days and some nights with only a couple hours of sleep, but Laura did have some help waiting in the wings. Her husband and a supportive group of family members.
We knew we wouldn't have kind of extended capital to invest in, you know, new kitchen equipment, labor. So really, it was a pretty scrappy affair I brought in. I'm very fortunate. We moved to Atlanta partly because my husband's family is around here. So we drew on his family to really help us get this order together. And they were amazing. They would come in after their own jobs and help us with packing, help us label and, you know, pack the cases. And we could not have done it without their help. And we really, I don't think we could have found any other kind of short notice, short season labor to help us out. So that was key for us. And it's not something that everyone is fortunate to have.
I would highly recommend building a team from people you know. It is, I would say that if you're a startup and for the first year, you probably shouldn't be hiring anyone outside of people that you know or friends of friends. It is because those are the people that you can find passion with. Those are the people that can see your passion and can get as passionate about the product. So it's going to be less about compensation. It's going to be more about the mission of the company. And if you can give them the bug that you have of the mission, I believe that they can do really well. And you can build a very strong team of dedicated individuals that are interested in the same mission as you are.
And right now, it's just Laura and her lean team of two part-timers, her husband and sister-in-law. The team scaled back down after that holiday rush. So what about the long term? How do you know when it's time to hire? This is often a pivotal point for most small businesses.
We don't have a sales force or even a full-time PR person. We're all doing it ourselves. It's a 24-hour-a-day job. We've pushed ourselves further than I expected to go, just with our core team, and it's also helped us sort of stay reined in. Hopefully we'll be ready to take those next steps and kind of multiply those efforts out. But it's been good to keep it really core In this first year and a half. I'm pushing to the limit. I'm hustling real hard. I like to be in rock. I did to get the money. They say talk a chip. That's why they never took for free. Respect my time, boy.
When we started the company, I was the only tech guy for a while. And you try to do everything and you try to sort of be your own admin. You try to be your own Salesforce administrator. You try to be your own project manager. But eventually you obviously can't do all of those things at once. And you start figuring out how will you build your team and how will you shard yourself in a way into other roles. So you start by hiring one of each hats that you wear. And then you start building processes and seeing how those, because as one person, it's very easy to communicate with yourself. And it's very easy. The process is very smooth if you're by yourself. But when it comes to hiring, it's important for you to realize which hats are you wearing. And also making sure that you are assigning those roles the proper processes that they can work almost like a well-oiled machine.
And that's exactly what Dean Heckler did. Dean is the founder of Heckler Design, a product design company that started out small but grew into a globally distributed and recognizable brand. The first hat he took off, customer service.
I was doing everything, and it was becoming too much to try to keep up with new designs or day-to-day shipping and keep up with customer service as well. So, it wasn't a hard call for me that, you know, customer service is probably what I would want to hire someone to do, and that was my first hire. That one was quickly validated that, we can do so much more. You know, if I'm spending my time growing the company and I have somebody dedicated to make sure my customers were taken care of on a customer service side, it validated itself pretty quickly. But yeah, it was a bit of, you know, can we afford to do this? Can I afford to do this? But every time we've made that decision, it's as long as we didn't make the decision lightly, it's worked out.
But what about all those other little make-or-break decisions business owners have to face? What Laura alluded to earlier at the start of the episode.
Right now, I'm really thinking about growth and what our next step is and whether we want to, I kind of alluded to it, whether we want to look for investors and kind of take another great leap forward, or whether we're going to stick it out and grow organically and kind of do a self-funded growth. That's what I'm thinking a lot of right now. And also deciding when the time is to take that step to be financially responsible and make sure that our cash flow stays intact. And because it's going to need a lot to take us to the next level as far as equipment, space, labor. It's a big question. I think I think you come across millions of those little make or break decisions, and that's the big one that's ahead of us.
Until then, Laura said she's along for the ride, but she has found value in the direction a few other business owners have provided her.
I feel like it's just, I'm hanging on and I'm along for the ride in a lot of this, but as far as growing the business, I'm out of my depths, and I've found it really valuable talking to other small business people in kind of my similar sphere, but a few steps ahead of me, just to see how they're handling growth, you know, whether they're looking for investors or they're doing it on their own organically, whether they're renting kitchen space, hiring people, you know, all of that. I am learning every day how to go about doing that.
I then asked Laura what one of the biggest surprises has been along this journey.
Connecting with other business people and seeing how open they are about their own process and struggles and mistakes and successes. Just to know that you're not alone has been very surprising and gratifying. And again, the openness of the business community and willingness to help each other out is an awesome surprise.
And maybe that's what this entrepreneurial game is all about. connections and serving as each other's support system. Most of us don't come pre-programmed knowing how to grow a sustainable business and overcoming the many challenges that come along with it. By passing along what we've learned and seeking out the support of those one step ahead of us when we don't have the answers, the struggle becomes just a little bit easier. After all, we all experience similar challenges no matter what industry we're in or audience we serve. So given that, what would Laura pass along to other entrepreneurs?
Keep reminding yourself that you to stick with who you want to be and making a business that's going to maintain your core self. And you know, it's easy to go after goals and to go to make spreadsheets and know, you know, how many, what your projections are and what your sales need to be and all of this, and to kind of robotically go through pursuing that growth. But I think just really having people around you that remind you of who you are and who you want to be has been essential for me and for us. I think it's helped us keep a lot of soul in the product and a lot of connection with our customers. And so I think if you're like me, that's important. But in general, so maybe some people have that soul and that connection in them. So then you probably need someone around you who's going to be going after numbers and making sure all the boxes are checked. So just surrounding yourself with people who care and who can make up for whatever you are deficient in.
A few other final notes. One thing Malvi Malo and Heckler Design have done very well is attention to detail when it comes to high touch points for customers. Things like including handwritten notes with every package, highlighting their customers in social media, and always opting for the more quality option in everything from packaging to the elements that go into their products. These have become core to establishing the company culture and have undoubtedly contributed to their success. These qualities were baked into the foundation, and that goes back to what James was talking about earlier, building a solid base from which the company will operate going forward. This provides everyone who may come into the fold in the future a guiding light to follow, and it starts with the leaders of the company setting those standards and processes. Finally, those connections with other business owners Laura mentioned earlier, I was curious how she made them, because they were from all over the country. She credited social media with the assist. She used it as a tool to open up the dialogue. And incidentally, this is also how she got Anthropology to take notice, by cleverly tagging the company and their wedding brand, Beholden, in Instagram posts and sharing their content. The care packages of Malvi Malo she sent probably didn't hurt either. Coming up, a preview from next week's show. But first, this week's biz hack. It's GQ's. No, not the magazine. Q's as in a sequence. Comes from fellow Success Labber Chris Grabe. And GQ's is a task manager for Google and Google app users created by Google. So that means it syncs with all of your Google app products like Gmail, Contacts, Google Drive, Calendar, and the list goes on. For instance, if you set a task with a due date in GQ's, it will sync with your calendar. And if you need to change the due date, you can either do it from your calendar or in the task manager, and it will sync across both. You can also attach Google Drive documents in a GQ's task or turn emails into tasks. So if you're into task management systems and a Google Apps user, you might dig GQ's. There is a free version, but if you want those integrations I just mentioned, you do have to upgrade to the $25 per year option. There's also a $50 per year option for businesses. Listen, I'm a big bird, and yo, we just my service. Never I'm a let it go, never
let it win. Living in a dream that's hard to reach. They say that the most successful Kickstarter campaigns raise somewhere between, I think, 10% to 15% of their initial goal in like the first 2 or 3 days. And we actually raised 20% of Ruby's Kickstarter goal in the first 2 days. So the first week in particular was huge for us in terms of funding and kind of like social media excitement. And then like any other typical, you know, like most other Kickstarter campaigns, the kind of the in-between time is a little bit of a lull. So that's, you know, the biggest challenge there is figuring out how to keep that momentum and that excitement going and, you know, keep those pledges coming in.
That was Katarina Kovacevic, a New York-based entrepreneur who I spoke to way back in episode 10. During that interview, she alluded to a new project she had in the works. Well, that project is Ruby, an online lifestyle publication. And now it's on Kickstarter, where she's hoping to raise $15,000 to get it off the ground. I talked to her about why she chose crowdfunding to seed her new venture, some of the challenges and opportunities that come with crowdfunding, and what will happen if for some reason it doesn't fund. Before I sign off, a quote from the legendary John Wooden, aka Coach. Success is never final. Failure is never fatal. It's courage that counts. Thank you to Laura Curtis-Rotana for sharing her journey of Molly Malo, and Dean Heckler from Heckler Design and James Kenigsberg from 2U for sharing their insights. Thanks for tuning in to episode 39. Past episodes can be found at successlab.fm.